of America's Military Veterans. Available in a standard hardback edition, as well as a deluxe boxed edition signed by President Bush himself. Go to patriotdepot.com/portraitsofcourage to get yours today. Use coupon code USARadio to save 10% off your entire order.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
When friends are not enough and you are struggling with depression, anxiety, or addictions, it's time to seek out help. Mental health is one of the most important building blocks to a healthy life. Tune into Counselors Chat every Wednesday at noon and listen to many topics that pertain to good mental health. With Ruth Altamura Roll, a licensed professional counselor, as your host, you will learn about many facets of good mental health. Let's remove the stigma. Go to www.altarollcounselor.net for more information about my practice. And please follow me on Counselors Chat on Facebook. Remember, Counselors Chat every Wednesday at noon. I wish you good mental health.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
Good afternoon, and the weather this afternoon is going to be mostly cloudy with a high near 44. Northeast winds around 6 miles an hour. Tonight it'll be mostly cloudy with a low around 33. South winds around 5 miles an hour, becoming calm after midnight. Tuesday, rain mainly after 9 a.m., patchy fog before 1 p.m., and a high will be near 49. Southeast winds 3 to 7 miles an hour. It's probably an 80% chance of precipitation. Tuesday night, rain mainly before 7 p.m. and patchy fogs after 1 a.m. with a low around 46. South winds 5 to 8 miles an hour with gusts as high as 20 miles an hour. Again, the chance of precipitation is 80%. Wednesday, showers likely. Then showers and possible a thunderstorm after 10 a.m. Patchy fog before 10 a.m. and a high near 61, breezy with the southwest winds 10 to 20 miles an hour becoming west in the afternoon. Chance of precipitation is again 80%. Wednesday night, guess what? Showers, likely before 7 o'clock, partly cloudy with a low around 30, and the chance of precipitation is 60%. New precipitation amounts of less than a tenth of an inch is possible. And Thursday is supposed to be sunny, so let's keep our fingers crossed for that. Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County. Good afternoon and welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm your host, Larry Cartwright, and this is NAMI's Hour, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and there is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we are all volunteers. We have no office, no paid staff. We work out of our houses, use our own phones, that sort of thing. And what we do is we try to help people who have someone either in their family or someone they work with or know or are friends with who have a mental illness, or someone who has a mental illness get the right treatment that they need. We do this in various ways. We teach classes for folks who, like I said, know someone or have someone in their family. And it's a 12-week course called Family to Family. And what it does is it covers medications, side effects, what to do, what not to do, what to say, what not to say in certain circumstances. And it tries to get the person taking the course understand a little bit more and feel more what it's like to be the person with the illness. We also run a support group that's once a month, the third Thursday of every month, and it's at 52 East Main Street. And everything we do is free of charge. You do have to register for the family-to-family class, but you don't have to register for the support group. And you don't have to be a member of NAMI to go to either one or to any of the other programs or educational services we provide. If you have any questions or would you like some further information, you can call 908-284-0500. That's 908-284-0500. And we don't mind the phone 24 hours a day, but we do have a young lady who checks it at least twice a day, and we promise you we will get back to you as soon as possible. Today, we are very fortunate to have with us Dr. Marla Deibler. And Dr. Deibler is a licensed clinical psychologist, and she's the founder and executive director of the Center for Emotional Health of Greater Philadelphia, which is in Cherry Hill and also in Princeton, New Jersey. Dr. Deibler has been on Dr. Oz, A&E Hoarders, CBS, ABC, Fox News, and has had articles in New York Times and other major newspapers. It's truly a pleasure to have you back with us, Dr. Deibler. I know you are very busy, and I appreciate you taking the time out to, you know, spend some time with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Like I said, it's always a pleasure because what you do is, I think, so important and so helpful to so many people. So, you know, it's great. Your centers, I believe, specialize in anxiety disorders and obsessive compulsive and some related disorders. Would you please take us through those disorders and some of the symptoms that you see?
Sure. Yes, we specialize in anxiety disorders, in obsessive compulsive related disorders, and in neurodevelopmental disorders. So anxiety disorders include things like generalized anxiety disorder, phobias like social phobia or other kinds of specific phobias, panic disorder, and other kinds of anxiety-based disorders. Obsessive-compulsive and related disorders is a newer family of anxiety-based disorders that include obsessive-compulsive disorder, hoarding disorder, trichotillomania, excoriation disorder, body dysmorphic disorder. And then the neurodevelopmental disorders that we treat include disorders such as attention deficit disorder, as well as Tourette's disorder, other kinds of tic disorders, and learning disorders as well.
That's quite a scope of illnesses that you treat. I think it's wonderful, actually. What are some of the symptoms like of some of these illnesses? I know you named the medical term for hair pulling. I'd have trouble saying it. Trichotillomania? Is that it?
Yes, trichotillomania.
Okay, and right. That's hair pulling. And then you said excoriation? Is that it?
Right, excoriation disorder.
Which is skin picking.
It's like trichotillomania in that it's what we call a body-focused repetitive behavior. Body-focused repetitive behavior are behaviors that unintentionally cause damage to the hair, skin, or nails by scratching or picking or pulling or biting, that unintentionally causes damage to the body. And these individuals attempt to stop, but it's quite difficult. So you might compare it to something a little bit more socially accepted in the category, such as nail biting, for example.
Yeah, but even nail biting, you know, I've known, working with NAMI for almost 20 years, I met one or two people who did the nail biting, and I mean, they bit it right down to there was nothing left, you know. That's like a compulsion also, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the body-focused repetitive behaviors do share that sort of compulsive-like repetitive behavior characteristic with the, you know, the cousins in the category, like OCD.
Okay.
But, yeah, some of them can be quite problematic, whereas we know a lot of people who bite their nails. We see them out on the street, and it's considered somewhat socially acceptable and that most people don't look twice if they see someone biting their nails. But really, nail biting can be quite problematic. Some people bite their nails down so far and bite their cuticles as well, the extent that they get skin infections and other kinds of medical problems as a result. So it can be quite significant for them.
Yeah, that was the two individuals I had run across over, you know, and they were, like, they had no nails. They were all gone, you know, and that was, you know, I was, like, amazed. Now, would you explain skin picking? What exactly is skin picking? I don't quite understand that.
So skin picking, or as it's formally termed in the DSM, excoriation disorder, is essentially when people pick at, bite at, scratch at, pick at the skin, not just problematic points of skin such as, you know, a scab, for example. Uh-huh. A lot of people would pick at a scab, but also they also target healthy skin to the extent that they cause damage.
Okay.
And they have a very difficult time inhibiting that behavior, and it leads to problems, both, you know, psychological toll of the shame or embarrassment or secretiveness of the behavior, but also, you know, problems like skin infections and other kinds of medical problems as a result.
Now, would cutting fall within this realm?
So cutting is not considered to be a body-focused repetitive behavior. Cutting typically is considered to be what we call self-injurious behaviors, or sometimes it's called non-suicidal self-injury.
Mm-hmm.
And the mechanism by which, the function by which people engage in cutting is much different than the function of skin picking behavior.
Okay.
So, for example, people who pick their skin are typically carrying it out in order to fix an area of skin. Like, let's say they pick from their arm, and their arm is typically a little bit bumpy, and they pick at the bumps because they want to smooth it out and help it be nice and smooth and feel smooth and look smooth. They're trying to essentially repair it by picking at it and trying to fix it so that it'll heal faster. People who cut don't cut for that reason. People who cut typically are cutting because there's an emotional numbness to them, and they cut as a way to have an intense emotional and physical experience because of that emotional numbing.
I don't know if I mentioned this to you, you know, the last time you were on, but I used to worked part-time at the hospital after I retired, and I was in what the unit called emergency services, and the hospital has, you know, well, I call it a lockup ward, but it's, you know, a ward for patients who may be a little more, you know, dangerous or whatever. And I used to go there once a week and speak to the, you know, to the patients. And this one young man said to me, "Can I talk to you after?" I said, "Sure." You know, and we went out and we were talking. And he rolled up his sleeves on both arms. "Doctor, there wasn't a piece of skin that wasn't scarred from cutting." And I couldn't even talk, and that's unusual for me. But I was so shocked. And he said that the pain in his head was so bad that it was easier to feel the pain when he cut than to feel the pain in his head. And I was just, you know, I was just mind-boggled. I hope I got him help. I hope he followed through with it and such. But, you know, I just couldn't believe that someone would do that so badly. I mean, like I said, there wasn't an inch of skin on his arms that weren't scarred, you know. And so I just feel that it's, you know, that's another problem that, you know, I don't know that you deal with it, but I know that, you know, it is a problem, you know.
It is. That's actually a really excellent example of what cutting behavior, self-injurious behaviors look like when you talk to someone about their experience with them. That's pretty typical of what they generally support. And yeah, it is problematic. It's not something that I treat. The kinds of therapies that are typically used to help people who engage in those behaviors is a different kind of therapy that requires a very specialized treatment as well.
Right, I would think, you know. What are some of the symptoms of, like, obsessive-compulsive anxiety? You know, every one of us, I guess, you know, sometime or another throughout our lives, get anxious. You know what I mean? It could be over a job interview. It could be over, you know, an upcoming marriage, you know, or whatever, you know, or starting a new job, et cetera. But we all get anxiety of some sort. What is the difference between, what's lack of word, quote unquote, normal anxiety that everybody gets and anxiety disorders?
Right. So you're right. Anxiety is a completely normal, healthy functioning of the way that our minds and bodies work, right? Anxiety is built into us as sort of a protective mechanism, right? We have this way of being able to scan our environment for safety. And if something seems threatening in some way to us, whether it threatens our physical safety or whether it threatens our psychological safety, then we interpret that as potentially being dangerous, and it sets off our alarms. It activates our sympathetic nervous system and triggers what we call the fight or flight response. And that's a normal response in people that helps us to prepare for facing or getting away from something that we feel is threatening. So, for example, if we're walking down the street and a large dog starts to chase us and bark at us and seems threatening, it gives us the energy we need to get away from it. And so our nervous system is prepared to manage threats in that way. With anxiety disorders, what happens is that we develop a false sense of what is safe and what is not safe.
Okay.
So people who have anxiety disorders misperceive their experiences at times as being threatening when they're really not threatening. And our bodies are not set up to know the difference. So when we perceive something as threatening and our bodies get the signal to turn on the sympathetic nervous system and prepare itself to fight this thing, it responds in that way. And when it's not an actual threat, that response can be problematic.
Okay.
So whereas if our nervous system is activated because we are being chased by a large rabid dog, that's helpful. If our nervous system turns on in the same way because we have to give a presentation at work in front of a team of 10 people, that's not going to be quite as helpful. In fact, it's probably going to create some physiological changes in order to help us that become a little overwhelming, right? So when our nervous system activates and it prepares us to have that energy to run, speeding up our heart rate and increasing our blood pressure is probably not going to help us, for example, when you have to deliver a speech.
Yeah.
So it's all about, you know, whether or not we are able to assess the real threats in our environment accurately and whether or not we can respond accordingly to the feedback in our environment.
Right. Well, that, you know, that's very interesting, you know, and I have a couple more questions, but I have to take a quick break. You're listening to Mental Health Matters, and we'll be right back in a couple minutes.
Hello, my name is Robert Burns. My website is bobburnspeaks.com. Please tune in to Living Consciously, where myself and my co-host will entertain you, inform you, and educate you in certain modalities. Living consciously is something that we really must learn to do, because that way you'll know what's going on around you. This show can be heard at 2 p.m. every Friday on HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Thank you.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in a critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. I'm your host, Larry Cartwright, and we're very privileged today to have with us Dr. Marla Deibler. And Dr. Deibler is a clinical psychologist, and she's the founder and executive director of the Center for Emotional Health of Greater Philadelphia, but it's located in Cherry Hill and also in Princeton, correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay. You had mentioned earlier Tourette's syndrome. Would you explain what that is?
Tourette's syndrome is a neurological disorder that's characterized by vocal and motor tics, which are mostly involuntary movements or vocal sounds.
Okay, like tapping the hand on the table or something like that, or?
Potentially. Common vocal tics, for example, are throat clearing sounds, gasping sounds. Sometimes you'll hear something we call echolalia, where people repeat sounds that other people say or words that other people say. Sometimes loud noises like barking sounds. And motor tics, common motor tics, are things like eye blinking or grimacing or hand movements. There are a lot of different kinds of vocal and motor tics that people sometimes display.
Now, if someone has Tourette's, is that like a chemical imbalance in the brain type thing?
It is a neurological disorder. It's a problem in the motor cortex of the brain, and it can be treated with medications, okay. Although those medications have potential side effects that are pretty unpleasant, and so typically the first line of treatment, unless the tics are very disruptive to someone's functioning, is behavior therapy.
Yeah, a lot of medications have side effects that we don't like to see about, you know, or hear about, unfortunately. But because I know, you know, a lot of times with mental health, doctors will prescribe a medication and the person will gain 40 pounds. And, you know, if you take a young lady anywhere from 15 to 25 or more, and, you know, you put her on a medication and she gains 40 pounds, she's not going to want to take the medication, you know.
Sure.
And it's understandable. I know my youngest son is paranoid schizophrenic, and they put him on one medication a while back, well, a couple of years back, and he gained over 50 pounds. And he's not a tall person to start with, and, you know, it's like his face just blew up. And, you know, and then they wanted to put him on something else to, you know, to quit that. Now we said, no, wait a minute. Let's find something else because this is not working, you know. But anyway, so, you know, the side effects of medications, I can understand, you know, having been through it quite a bit. Now, cognitive behavior therapy. What is it, and what do you use it for? What is it used for?
Cognitive behavioral therapy is essentially the most evidence-based psychotherapy, and it involves helping people to understand the relationships between their thoughts, their emotional experiences, and the behaviors that they exhibit, so that they can take the dysfunctional patterns of the relationships between thoughts, feelings, and behaviors and change them to be more adaptive.
And is there a specific illness you use it for?
It's an evidence-based treatment for, I should say, the kinds of treatments that we use fall within the umbrella of cognitive behavioral therapies. So cognitive behavioral therapy is a collection of a lot of different kinds of treatments, and within them fall specific kinds of treatment interventions that we do use for these problems, including all of them that we've talked about today.
Okay. I got another one here. Is it dialectic behavior therapy? Do you use that
the
also?
Dialectical behavior therapy is a kind of cognitive behavioral therapy. And typically what it's used for is to help people learn skill set to be able to regulate their emotions more effectively. And typically dialectical behavior therapy, or sometimes it's called DBT, typically DBT is carried out in a comprehensive program that involves group therapy, individual therapy, treatment team meetings, and individual consultations. It's a comprehensive program, typically, and it's used for individuals that have a great deal of emotion dysregulation. So, for example, the folks that you spoke of earlier who have a problem with cutting behavior, mm-hmm. and the emotional dysregulation that leads to cutting behavior, that is the treatment that is used for those individuals.
Oh, I see. Okay. Now, you have two centers, Cherry Hill and Princeton, correct?
We do.
Okay. Do they both treat the same thing, or is it one treat one and the other treats something else?
They're a little bit different, and
okay.
Actually in the fall we're going to be opening a third center that's going to be a little bit different. So
you can elaborate. You know, you can explain it all.
Both both Cherry Hill and Princeton focus in the treatment of anxiety disorders and obsessive compulsive and related disorders, as well as those neurodevelopmental disorders that we talked about. However, in Cherry Hill, we also do some other work in helping kids in school systems to have better educational planning. So we do psychoeducational evaluations and help with school consultations so that they can have better accommodations in school, whether through the 504 process or through the IEP process, to help kids succeed in their academic programs.
Right. And I have to ask, where is the new center going to be?
It's actually going to be in Cherry Hill. It's going to be
okay.
About 50 feet from our current office. Our psychoeducational program to help kids with learning disorders and with ADHD and disruptive behavior disorders has actually grown so much that it's begun to usurp a little bit of our other work, and okay. So we're going to give it a home of its own.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, you have to look at it that you're doing something right, because it's, you know, overwhelming in one area. So, you know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, if you weren't doing something right, you wouldn't have the opportunity to open it, you know. So that's great.
Right, right. Yeah, every time there's a growing need that we can't meet, you know, we try to rethink how to better meet the needs of our community.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's wonderful what you're doing, because there's so many people that are affected by the illnesses that we have been talking about. Sometimes they don't want to go for help, but sometimes they don't know where to go for help, you know. And so I think it's awesome what you're doing.
Thanks. Yeah, that's you know, one of the things that we're focused on with our new psychoeducational program, and we're calling it CEH Family Care. And the idea is that there are so many families who struggle with, you know, their own set of individual, unique problems in terms of managing a child's behavior or managing ADHD, which is so common these days. Helping families to better manage those behaviors, not just in school, but also in the home setting and other places, so that, you know, families can enjoy each other more and function better in various settings.
Do you think there is a reason why, like, ADHD is so on the rise?
It's hard to say. It's controversial as to whether or not it's actually on the rise, or whether we're just able to better identify it, or whether the expectations we have for our kids are changing, or the structures of our classrooms are changing. It's difficult to say. It does appear to be increasing, but there are so many potential confounding variables as to why that might be.
Right.
I think it's hard to say, and I think it's probably a combination of those things, that part of it probably is our changing expectations. Part of it is probably, you know, the structure of our classrooms and what we expect from kids. And I mean, it's not easy to be a kid. Not that it ever was, but, you know, it's quite a lot to ask of someone of any age to be in a setting concentrating and doing work for, you know, 7 hours a day, and then having to go home and do these other activities and also be a kid and also sit back down and do work some more for another few hours.
Right.
It's quite demanding.
And I think, well, a lot of times in this day and age, too, you know, a lot of pressure is put on the kids to be on the debate team or football team, or, you know, be a cheerleader, you know, and do this and do that, because that's going to look good on your resume to go to college. And, you know, so I think there's a lot of pressure that society and parents put on children. And I think it's unfortunate, but, you know, it's what happens. It's this day and age, you know.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think we put more pressure on our kids than ever. And it's not even just, you know, what we've seen in the last 20 years, you know, where kids are expected to do very well in school and also have honors classes and earn extra you know, GPA points because of that, or AP classes that perhaps they could transfer into college for credit, or but also extracurriculars, academic extracurriculars, as well as sports.
Right.
But even now, you know, I think that, that's even changing a bit. I know I have three kids, and in our school district, our high school students are actually required to accumulate community service hours as well, which is wonderful. That's great. It's a great value to teach our kids. But it is another expectation.
Right. It's another part of their day, you know, so to speak. You know, I think it's wonderful, like you said, you know, but I think also that it's, you know, another little bit of pressure on them to do this, you know.
It is, and I think it's becoming ever increasingly difficult for our kids to be able to compartmentalize because of the way they're constantly connected through social media and through, you know, cell phones and computers, that they can't just go home and turn off school and focus on home and the things that they need to do there. They're constantly connected to all these different facets of their life and having to continually interact and balance them. And that's tough. That's tough for us as adults. I can only imagine what it's like for a developing brain to try to learn to manage all that.
And, you know, it's a shame that sometimes they just can't be kids for a while, you know. Having had four of them, you know, while my wife had them, you know, but, you know, three boys and a girl. And, you know, I just, in this day, I just feel that a lot of times they're just not kids anymore. You know, they're.
Yeah. Where do they fit in? Just going outside and running around and.
Right. And playing baseball or soccer or whatever, or, you know, on the street or whatever, you know. It's just not the same, you know.
Yeah, times have changed. Recreation has changed. For example, you know, 20 years ago, you know, on any given day in summer, you could drive down a suburban street and see kids playing outside. And now you don't see that quite as much.
No.
Kids have different ways of interacting. For example, if you have a teenage boy like I do this day and age, what a lot of them do is they're playing online with their friends on the computer.
Right.
You know, they're talking. They're talking to each other with through headsets, and they're working on some game, and they're not even physically together.
Right. Right. It's, you know, it is a different world, and, you know, I don't know whether it's better or worse, but I do know that a lot of young people. Are having trouble dealing with the pressure, you know, from being involved with NAMI and so on and so forth. I see it, and it's, you know, it's sad, you know. It really is, in a way, because...
It's a lot for kids to manage. There's an article that just recently came out, I want to say last week. I believe it was in New York Times, that essentially looked at some numbers of presenting mental health problems in college campuses, that demonstrated that mental health complaints, anxiety and depression specifically, are significantly increased in college-age kids these days. In fact, college counseling centers can't keep up in terms of being able to help them.
Mm-hmm. And there's been a number of surveys, and they've come up with the second leading cause of death on college campuses is suicide, and that's kind of scary, you know. In fact, very scary.
Yeah, it's certainly a challenge for college counseling centers to be able to help the kids who come for help, and also be able to identify the kids who don't. You know, how do you do that in a campus of, you know, 20,000-30,000 kids who are away from home?
Right, exactly. I got another question. Surprise, right? What is exposure and response prevention?
Exposure and response prevention is a kind of cognitive behavioral therapy that we use to treat obsessive compulsive disorder.
Okay.
And different kinds of exposure therapies are used to help people with anxiety disorders in general. And what exposure is it is a systematic way of helping people to confront the things that cause them a great deal of anxiety that they, as a result, have avoided over time and have learned to avoid over time in order to kind of retrain their brains to learn that these things are not threatening and that they're not, they don't need to fear these things in the way that they've developed a pattern of doing.
Okay. One other training, habit reversal and mindfulness training.
So habit reversal training is a kind of behavior therapy that we use to treat Tourette's disorder, different kinds of tic disorders, and body-focused repetitive behaviors like trichotillomania or excoriation disorder, mm-hmm. that helps people look at their patterns of behaviors to help them to learn to intervene by helping them to decrease the likelihood that a pattern will play out in a way that's dysfunctional for them, and to give them other ways of responding to the triggers that lead to the problematic behavior, whether it's, you know, hair pulling or skin picking or a loud and disruptive tick or something like that. So we're helping them to learn about their patterns or behaviors and learning to intervene in a way that prevents the problematic response so that it's less disruptive for them.
Okay. When someone does hair pulling, do they just pull the hair or they pull it out or both?
It depends. Everybody's hair pulling is a little bit different. What trichotillomania is when people pull the hair out or when they break the hair off in a way that causes significant damage for them. So, you know, the average person who has trichotillomania pulls hair out of part of their body that causes some hair loss that's noticeable.
Okay. Do you find that hair pulling or nail biting or skin picking, which one do you feel or you see the most of, or all three are about the same?
Here in the treatment setting, we probably see more trichotillomania in terms of which body-focused repetitive behavior do we see the most. Probably trichotillomania.
Okay.
And followed by skin picking. And then followed by other things. Why that is, there's probably a lot of different factors involved. One being it's difficult to camouflage noticeable hair loss, and it can be quite damaging to someone in terms of just their emotional health.
Right.
And so, and I think it's a little bit more recognized these days. So, you know, they can do an internet search, you know, search Google, and Google will say, here's this problem, and there's treatment for this, mm-hmm. and then they can mm-hmm. get help, as opposed to skin picking, where I think people don't pathologize that quite as much. So someone might, for example, an 18-year-old with acne might spend 2 hours a day picking at their face, started off perhaps as picking at pimples during early adolescence, and, you know, they've kind of grown to spending a couple hours a day kind of picking and damaging what started off as pimples but now are just, you know, lesions essentially on their face.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for the most part they see that as just being an unfortunate result of having dermatological problems, whereas it's really not about that. That might be what initially triggered the skin picking behavior, but the fact that they're spending 2 hours picking at their skin, causing more damage, and feeling, you know, shame as a result, and perhaps avoiding going out because of their embarrassment and everything else that kind of happens as a result. I think they're less likely to see that as pathological and in need of treatment.
Right. We have to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple minutes, so stay tuned.
Mm-hmm.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 40 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investors, Rabcoin has been for the industry since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block has been an expert and an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Help make your community safer. Hunterdon County Crime Stoppers is a community-based program aimed at making our community safer by providing an avenue for citizens to anonymously report criminal activity. It provides monetary rewards if the information leads to an arrest and indictment. See something, say something, and get cash for your anonymous tip. Call or text 1-800-321-0010 or go online to www.crimestoppershunterdon.com.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and we're very privileged to have with us today Dr. Marla Deibler. And Dr. Deibler is an licensed clinical psychologist, and she's the founder and executive director of the Center for Emotional Health of Greater Philadelphia, which is in Cherry Hill and also in Princeton. I have to ask, I know that you were on A&E Hoarders. Now, is that something that's picked up because of the TV shows that's come to light, or has it been always been a disorder?
Yeah, I don't know that the prevalence has changed, but it has certainly come to the attention of, you know, the general population, mm-hmm. I think, because of the media interest in the disorder. I do.
And that's got to be something very hard to, I don't want to say, well, cure, or, you know, because having seen one or two homes where somebody had hoarding, it was like you couldn't walk through it. I mean, it was stuff piled up. You know, I'm a little, just a shy shade over 6 foot. And, I mean, it was like up to my shoulders on both sides, and it was so narrow that you could barely walk through the whole apartment and house. You know, and how do we cure that?
It can be quite difficult to treat. Hoarding was officially listed as a diagnosis in our diagnostic manual in 2015. Prior to that, it was written about in the literature. It just didn't have a diagnosis of its own. Mm-hmm. It was categorized as sort of a related symptom of a related disorder. But it wasn't until 2015 that it officially got its own diagnosis. There is a specific kind of cognitive behavioral therapy that's used to treat hoarding disorder, and it can be quite challenging. There's a pretty wide range of insight that characterizes individuals who struggle with hoarding. Some of them have very good insight, and they want to work on it, and they notice the negative impact that they have, that the problem has on their lives, and they want to work toward improving that. And other people don't have as good of insight, and it's difficult for them to work on it. Right. Even when the insight is good, it can be quite challenging. It's a lot of work. Not only do we have to actually help them through working on their homes and their living spaces to render them more useful, but we also have to teach them the skill set to be able to think of things in different ways and respond to them differently so that they're making better decisions about items so that they don't simply reaccumulate after we're done.
Right, right. How do you get your clients? Are they referred from other doctors, or do they just reach out to your center, or?
A variety of ways. Sometimes people are looking for help for a specific thing, and they hit the internet, and they go looking for resources in their area, and they find us that way. Other times they're referred by other doctors in the area, or other therapists mm-hmm. in the area. Other times they are referred by specialized inpatient programs, residential programs, or other kinds of higher-level programs, or sometimes they're referred by advocacy organizations who are connected to some of the specific disorders that we treat.
And what would be the procedure for someone, say, coming the first time? Are they screened, or what is the procedure?
So the first thing somebody would do if they were interested in treatment is they would give our office a call, and they would speak with our office manager. Her name is Lisa. She's wonderful. She keeps this place
running.
She keeps all the wheels turning.
Yeah, exactly.
And Lisa would talk to them a little bit about what they're looking to come in for, what they're looking to have treatment for, or what they need evaluation for, and what their history has been with treatment in the past. And once she identifies broadly what their needs are, they would be scheduled for an initial evaluation with one of our psychologists. So they would then come in for an initial evaluation with one of those psychologists, and the mm-hmm. psychologist would spend an hour meeting with them and discussing their needs and their history in order to come up with a treatment plan, whether or not it's that psychologist or someone else in the practice that will be providing them with treatment.
Okay. Once they're in the program, do they have like a case manager or something like that?
No. So we kind of streamline in that once the initial evaluation has been completed, they get matched with a therapist who would be a good fit for them, and then that okay. therapist is their go-to for everything. So it's that therapist who would be delivering, providing them with therapy, but also any kind of coordination of care. So if they also need to see a psychiatrist, they would coordinate that care, or if there's any collaboration with any other kinds of treatment providers, they would be coordinating that care as well.
Okay. And what is the average length of time for treatment, or does it depend on the person?
Yeah, it really depends on the person and
what
they're coming in with,
and
a lot of different factors related to that individual. The average patient is probably in treatment for anywhere from 3 to 6 months,
okay.
depending on the presenting problem, but there mm-hmm. are certainly people who are here for a little bit less, and there are people here for more. So it really depends on the person.
If someone goes through the treatment and is gone for, a period of time, can they come back?
They can, yeah. In fact, the way that we often do it is because there are times of the year where we can have a little bit of a waiting list for established patients who have seen us in the past. They always get priority. So if someone hasn't
okay.
been in for a year, but they want to come in for a booster because they have some stuff going on and they mm-hmm. just kind of need a little bit of a refresher, then we make every effort to get them in as soon as possible first.
All right. Do you take insurance?
We do take some insurance.
Okay.
Yeah, we have a couple of insurance contracts. And for those that we don't have contracts with, people typically choose to use either like a flexible spending account or they choose to submit their own claims for out-of-network benefit coordination for reimbursement.
And you don't have Medicare or Medicaid, right?
We opt out of Medicare.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't participate with Medicare.
Okay. Would you give out your website and phone number for someone or anyone who would like some more information or, you know, reach out to you?
Sure. Our phone number is 856-220-9672. That's 856-220-9672. And our website, which is a work in progress, we're actually currently working on completely making a whole new website where we're revamping everything and emphasizing some of our new programs and some other things that are in development. Our current website is thecenterforemotionalhealth.com.
Okay, that's thecenterforemotionalhealth.com?
Right.
Okay. And the phone number was 856-220-9672, correct?
That's right.
Hey, well, how about that? I can't tell you how happy I am that you come on, Doctor. I really mean that, because what you're doing is so great, and there's so many people out there who, you know, who you're helping. And, you know, I think that it's just wonderful. And I know I'm going to reach out to you again and have you back on again down the road. So, but I really would like to thank you for being on, taking the time to talk to us for an hour or so. It really is inspiring, and I think that, you know, it's wonderful the work you're doing. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me, and thank you for what you do. The more that people talk about this, the less stigmatized it is, and the more willing people are to reach out and get the help that they need. So thank you.
Exactly. That's what we try to do, is break the stigma, you know, so people can reach out and get help from, you know, organizations like yours or, you know, wherever. So I really do appreciate it. Enjoy the summer. Hopefully the weather will be better and we don't have a snow like we had today. Or you didn't have that much. We had it. You know, where I live, I had it. But you know, enjoy the summer, and we'll reach out to you again down the road, because I'd love to have you back on again.
Great. I'd be happy to. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Enjoy your warm weather.
Yeah, when it gets here.
When it gets here.
Thank you, Doctor. Bye-bye now.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
We'll be back again next week, same time, same station. Remember, folks, mental health really does matter.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
at Let's Get Everyone to Listen to Home Sweet Home with me, Steve Bailey, Inspector with Brass Tack Home Inspections.
And I'm Pat Gregory, Handyman Extraordinaire with Taskman Home Improvements, every Friday at 11 a.m. Or you can go to our archives and get access to over 50 podcasts. We cover the basement to the attic and everything in between.
You can even call us at 908-237-0410 during our radio program about our home improvement projects. Remember, Home Sweet Home, every Friday at 11 on Hunterton Chamber Radio.
From the basement to the attic, you're listening to Steve and Patrick. Home Sweet.